Are you a fan of our podcast? If so, make sure you're following us on all of our social media channels. You can find us on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter by searching Trans2 Performance. By following us, you'll have access to exclusive content, special announcements, and more. Join the T2 community today.
Thank you. So, good morning. Miles better than yesterday. Miles better. So, firstly, I'd like to start with an apology. Can you hear me at the back okay? I'm quite loud, so as long as you can hear me. Can you hear? Yeah, sorry. So, I'd like to start with an apology. For those of you who was expecting Martin Johnson, the World Cup winning captain, yeah, you know, I apologize. I'm not quite the EasyJet version. So hopefully you'll get something from the day. In fact, I know you'll get something from the day. And this is the first thing I'd start with before I sort of introduce myself. If you come with me and bear with me over the next 50 minutes before you first sort of transition or break, and I'm going to take any Q&A at the end and I'll hang around at the end. But if you come with me and bear with me, you will get as much value from what I'm about to share with you in your personal life as you will your professional or volunteering life as well. Okay, so let me introduce myself a little bit more. My name's Martin Johnson. I am Hull born and bred, as you can probably tell by the accent. After a short time on Sutton Park, I grew up on Branscombe. Have we got anyone from Branscombe in? Yes. Salt of the earth, right? So I grew up on Branscombe. I was a little bit of a tow rag, let's say, a bit of a tearaway. I was probably on a path, not any path really, but a path that could have easily been the wrong path. I didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. I didn't do well at school, and I hit a real crossroads. So at 16 years old, I joined the military. And that was the turning point in my life. It was the changing point in my life. I joined the military and I served 5 years, served in South America, the Falklands, the Far East, the Mediterranean, had a wonderful time, and I grew up a lot. And since then, I've spent the last 14 years in business. And for 7 of those, I was really fortunate. In fact, I was really lucky. I managed to blag my way in to a global consulting business who were based out in Stanford in New York called Gartner. I don't know if anybody's ever heard of them. Global company, $4 billion, 85 countries. And I blagged my way in, lad from Branscombe, right? Within 3 years of working for that company, and here was the most fascinating, with a bit of grit and determination and channeling what I had learned in the military, within 3 years of working for that organization, I found myself running a $5 million part of their business, or a $5 million territory. $5 million, lad from Branscombe, right? And in two or three more years, we doubled that to $10 million under my leadership. And it was an amazing time for me, and I learned a lot. And what happened then is I had an opportunity to progress and move on, potentially move my family, my wife and children, out to a different country to be able to, you know, take on the next role. And at that point, I turned it down. I turned it down. Not only did I turn it down, but I gave up my career. I came back to Hull and I set up my own business 4 years ago. Because the reason I did that is because we were working with organizations who were spending millions of dollars, or I talk about dollars because it's an American company, millions of pounds on technology and process and products and services, and very little on people in comparison. Does that make sense? And it just didn't sit right with me. And you know, by the way, a little caveat to this, Sean said his language won't be fruitful. I can't promise that. So bear with me, right? What really got me angry was that people were spending all this money on technology and products and equipment and very little on the people development in comparison. So I wanted to make a change. I wanted to challenge that. And the only way I could do that is to set my own business up. So Trans2 Performance, my company, was born 4 years ago. I came to the deep. I got a pod office on my own. I had no resources, no people, nothing. And I set up a company 4 years ago. Fast forward to today. We have grown significantly. We have doubled the business every year. We are the leadership consultants and the personal development consultants for the likes of Siemens and K-Com and Jet2.com and Arco and Smith & Nephew and some of these big brands. We work in the military. We've just been appointed by the NHS to help culturally with some leadership in the NHS, which is fascinating. And I also work in professional sport. So we work with many sports teams on the mental skills of professional sport. Most recently, I've been the mental skills consultant for Hull FC rugby league team. Some black and whites in. It's not a good time for us to be celebrating right now, is it? So if there's any red and whites in, I understand. Yeah. If there's any red and whites in, I understand you can be smug this week without a shadow of a doubt. So I've got an array of experience, and everything that I do, I underpin with psychology, the human element and performance. And what I'm going to do with you today is I'm going to hit you with a load of stuff. I'm going to try and slow it down a little bit and try and not rush too much, but I'm going to hit you with some stuff, and I want you to come with me and bear with me. Take what you will and leave what you don't agree with or what you don't want to take. But I'm sure if you sit back and you throw yourself into this, it'll be a great start to your day, and it'll allow you to think about some things moving on, okay? So, unlocking your potential. I've told you a little bit about myself, but I'm going to start by sharing something with you all that I don't share with very few, if I'm honest. But I'm going to share it in such a public forum and on camera. Not so long back, I was diagnosed with a chronic autoimmune disease called Sjogren's syndrome. Just put your hand up if you've ever heard of Sjogren's syndrome. Put your hand up if you've got Sjogren's syndrome. It's the first time I've ever... Can me and you speak at the end of it? You can give me some advice. Right? Sjogren's syndrome is an autoimmune disease like multiple sclerosis or lupus, where your immune system attacks your body. Mine attacks your moisture-producing glands in the body. So anything in my body that produces moisture, my immune system will attack and destroy the tissues, and it gives me an array of problems. It attacks my eyes. So I have chronic dry eyes. It attacks my mouth, so I have a dry mouth, which for a speaker is a bloody nightmare, I'm telling you. So if I have to get a drink of water, bear with me. It attacks my lungs, so I have troubles breathing. It attacks my joints, so my joints ache. And an array of other autoimmune symptoms that I get. Now, I don't tell you this for sympathy. I want some. Thank you. But I don't tell you it for sympathy. I tell you this because when I share with you what I'm about to share with you, you will know that I am speaking from both my heart and experience, okay? We'll come back to that in a short while. So to better understand human behavior, we must first understand the human brain. And whenever I work on personal development or work on programs with leaders or whoever it may be, I always start with this concept, and I'm going to share it with you, and I want you to see if you can resonate. Who's read the book, show of hands, who's read the book, The Chimp Paradox by Dr. Steve Peters, just a show of hand? Couple. If you have read the book, read it again. If you haven't, go on Amazon, order the book. It's about £7 on Amazon. It's the best-selling personal development book of the last 5 or 10 years. The book changed my life. The book really did change my life. It was the catalyst for everything I've just explained, what I've achieved over the last 4 or 5 years to you. I'm going to explain Peter's work very simply for the start of my talk because it sets the scene for everything I'm going to talk about. Professor Steve Peters is a neuroscientist and a psychologist. He's worked with Ronnie O'Sullivan in snooker, in various sports teams, with GB cycling running up to the 2012 Olympics. And he's taken the brain, and for many years they have strapped people up to brain scanners, and they've put them in every situation that we face in life, and they've watched where the blood was flowing to the brain. So when we humans are faced with meeting people for the first time, when we're faced with making decisions, when we're faced with adversity, with nice experience, not so nice experiences, he was watching where the blood was flowing in our brain. And what he found was fascinating. Over that period of time, every time we humans are faced with a situation, the same three parts of the brain was lighting up. And it explains a lot about social sciences and how we are as animals and how we interact. And I think you'll find this fascinating. Let me give you a quick overview. The first part of the brain he talks about in the book is behind your forehead. He calls it your human. It's technically called your prefrontal cortex or your frontal lobe. Now, in social sciences, it's the part of your brain that's responsible for logic, facts, and rationale. Does that make sense? Your part of your brain that is scanning and searching, and it will not advise you unless it's got some evidence or data to back it up. It's your CEO. It's trying to guide you in the right path. And it won't allow you to jump to conclusions until it's found some logic to back it up. This part of our brain, incidentally, is what makes us different to any other species on Earth. right? We have a logical brain where we can problem solve, innovate, we learn to make tools, hunt, farm, and that's why we are at the top of the food chain. Really important part of your brain. It's logical, and it bases its decisions on facts and rationale. However, the second part of the brain he found in this experiment was this central part in the center of your brain, which sort of overlaps every other area of your brain. It's called your limbic system. And your limbic system, he calls your chimp. Because unlike your human, your chimp doesn't care about logic, fact, or rationale. No way, right? Your chimp is simply built on emotions and feelings. It's your gut instinct. Does this make sense? It will only guide and advise you on an emotion or a feeling. And the third part of the brain for this discussion is the yellow part on the screen, which just sits behind your crown. It's called your parietal lobe. Now, he calls it your computer because, simply put, it stores your memories and experiences as you go through life. Make sense? So here's the analogy. Your chimp and your human, even now, are going with you every nanosecond of every part of your life. One gives you input based on logic and fact and evidence. One gives you input based on feelings and emotions on a particular situation. You choose to act. However you choose to act, you will store it in your parietal lobe as a memory to pull upon at a later stage. Make sense? So the older you get, the wiser you get, right? Unless you've been putting a lot of crap in there for the last 20 years. And that's the analogy of social sciences. But here's the big reveal of the book. Still buy it because there's more to it than this. But here's the big reveal of the book. And this is where I'm going to make my salient point, my first salient point. We are all different in this room, personality-wise. Some of us, like me, are raving extroverts and expressive, right? Some are introverts. Some are amiables, analyticals, drivers, whatever it might be. That's what makes human collaboration fascinating. We're all different people. But what connects every human being on this planet is what I'm about to share with you. In your brain, in all of our brains, our limbic system, our chimp, is 5 times quicker to respond. 5 times, in fact, 7.8 seconds on average, or around 10 seconds, your chimp will give you a conclusion on a situation or somebody. 10 seconds, right? You're 5 times quicker than the logical part of your brain that can actually guide you in the more accurate path. It's also 5 times more influential on your decision. So we are irrational beasts. We are always going to act on emotion first and try to provide the logic secondarily. Does this make sense? You all did this on me 5 minutes ago when I stood up here. Whether you're conscious of it or not, you either went, he's all right, I'll give this a go. No? Or you went, same shit, different speaker. Clearly, right? You do it. Have you ever met anybody for the first time and you just don't like them? You don't know what it is, but you've someone's introduced at a Christmas party to a friend or somebody else and you've just gone, nah. Something about you. My wife says that all the time. There's something about you. But we do it because your chimp, your limbic system, in 7.8 seconds has to be able to decide. It has to give you a conclusion. Now, whether you believe in religion or science as to how we were made, right? Whatever serves you well, religion or science, but however you believe. I was thinking, why the hell is our most irrational chimp-led brain faster than the most logical thing that can guide us? And I couldn't get my head around it, but there is the 3 reasons, but there's one particular reason. What do you think it is? Anyone, what's the main reason our irrational? I nailed it. Only 3 roles to your chimp. And the number one is survival. We 2 million years ago, we had to be able to go run. There's a saber-toothed tiger. Don't eat those berries. They're poison. Don't walk off the edge of a cliff. Fire burns. We had to have a survival. We're an animal. We have to have survival instincts. Our number one response. And that is why your chimp, unfortunately, is always going to be in control, right? We didn't have chance 2 million years ago to look at the saber-toothed tiger and go, hang on a minute. It might not eat me. Sod that. Run, right? We have to do that. there's two other roles. So survival is the number one, but there's two other roles to the chimp. Reproduction. So it's not all bad, right? It's not all your fight or flight response and your danger and your risk. It's responsible for our desires and attractions, which is why we look at somebody in a bar and we go, they're all right. Right? Because we've got to continue the species. When you strip us back, our two primary functions as human beings is survival and reproduction. We have to survive. We have to continue the species. The third and final one on that screen is really important, though, and it's the third role of the chimp. As well as surviving and as well as having a tribe around us, we have to feel at an individual level that we serve a purpose, that we contribute in some way, that we have a sense of belonging. Right? And if we have these three things in intact, if you think about your life right now and you was to put a tick or a cross against those three things, it determines your level of self-fulfillment and happiness. If we are surviving and we're not under threat and we're not at risk, if our tribe around us are safe, and if we at an individual level feel like we contribute and we have purpose, we are one hell of a motivated human being. And they're the three dynamics that you have to look at the chimp. My wife is a wonderful woman. She's a wonderful woman. She gave up 9 years of her life so we could have three children. She gave up her career while I could, you know, pursue my business endeavors. And in that time frame, don't get me wrong, she raised our kids and saw them through to school. But she lost her purpose. And she struggled with a bit of anxiety and a bit of who she was over those time, because nobody can tell a mother that being a mother is purpose. It's not. It's a pain in the ass. In fact, you now carry the burden of survival on behalf of one, two, or three of the people at the same. Who in the room, mother or father, has had kids and your level of awareness to danger has gone through the roof, right? So all of a sudden, things you've never seen before, it's like walk on the inside of the roads, chew your food, getting on an aeroplane's horrendous, right? Because you now carry that survival burden on behalf of the little ones. So, you know, coming back to my wife for a second, for 9 years, she didn't feel like she had a purpose. It was like Groundhog Day. She loved every minute of doing it, but, you know, people need a purpose. Recently, about 12 months ago, she went out and worked on labor ward at the NHS delivering babies, and she's got her purpose back. She's got her mojo back, and she comes home every night and she tells me about it, and it's something for her, and that's what human beings need to do. And I know I'm speaking to an audience today, this morning, who has purpose. You volunteer because you have a purpose. Right? And I love speaking to these types of audiences because believe me, I speak to corporations and businesses and people on six-figure salaries working in jobs that they cannot stand and it doesn't give them purpose. And I know which way around I'd rather have it. So that's the three basic functions of the chimp. But coming back to the chimp and coming back to my first point, you all have a brain which will, 7.8 seconds to 10 seconds, you will conclude fight or flight, like or dislike, in or out, friend or foe. Does this make sense? But how does survival manifest in the modern day life? Because how many life or death situations have you actually been in? Seriously, but how many life or death? Probably very few. I've been in one. I was on a sinking ship. True story for another time. But very few, right? So how does survival manifest in your everyday life? Well, it manifests in you protecting your reputation, your egos, your decisions, your departments, whatever it might be. I'll give you an example in the modern day workplace. When someone sends you an email, right, fires a bullet at you or your team or your department and CCs the boss in. And straight away, your chimp comes out, 7 seconds. You read the first two lines of the email, your emotional state rises, the chimp saying to you internally, are you going to stand for this? Reply all. CC their boss in on it, let's get the world in, come on. And in an emotional rage, you go, right, you're having it, both barrels. And you type out this email and you send. And then you go off and make a brew, real proud of yourself. And you come back with your brew, and don't lie to me, because everybody does it, because I do it. You then read your sent item back just to see how good it was. And you're sort of really proud of yourself, and you're drinking, and then you get halfway down the email that you've sent, and your logical brain, your human comes in and goes, whoa! And even you go, it's a bit harsh. That was a bit harsh. Because the person you've sent the email to is Steve and you've known him for 10 years and there's got to be something going on behind that. Why has he sent that email, right? And that is the chimp in action. Have you ever been in a meeting or in a conversation with someone and they say something like, and you're probably not going to like what I'm about to say, but, and you think, well, you've already set up for it now. Do you know what I mean? I'm definitely not going to, or can I just challenge that? Have you ever read that one? And you think, well, you can, but I'm bloody ready for you. Right? So everyday life, you know, you think about your personal life. I'll give you an example of where my chimp comes out. The guy who parks his car outside my house. And I can't stand it, right? It's getting me mad thinking about it now. But we get very territorial. The chimp's territorial. So the guy who parks his car outside my house, I'm turning the street and in my head, my inner dialogue is saying he's going to be there again. And my chimp's already stoking my response, my emotional reaction. And I turn the corner and I see his car. And this is the dialogue I have with myself. Look, he's parked outside my house again. That's an absolute liberty. There's a space outside his house. That's even worse, right? There's a space outside his house. Why is he not parking out? Where are my visitors going to park? I don't even get visitors. Where are my visitors going to park? And this is what I'm saying to myself. Go knock on his door. Tell him to move it. So this is a true story. I'd only been in a few days. So I comes out. I'd had enough. I knocked on his door. Ex-military. Chest out. Chimp like Caesar from Planet of the Apes. Right? I knocked on his door. He comes to the door. He's a little fellow with a cup of tea and slippers. I said, hey, mate. Well, a bit more masculine than that. I said, what's this? What are you parking outside my house for? Park outside your own house. Where's my visitors going to park? I'm saying, don't even get visitors, right? Anyway, we had an altercation, not physically, verbally, but he moved his car. Victory. We haven't spoken for 6 years. We haven't. In fact, we take the bins out sometimes and I look three down and we sort of go, nod at each other and walk in, right? Now, I'd love to invite him to a barbecue and put this right, but I love telling this story, so I'm going to keep it going for a bit longer. But my point, can you resonate with what I'm saying? Can you resonate with our emotional chimp brain? We are always going to act first on emotion, and what we'll very rarely do is we'll always try to justify why we are right, very rarely challenge why we are wrong. And that's where stubbornness comes from. But it is so important from a development perspective that you understand, no matter what stage of life you're at, right, that you have a brain, an emotional brain, that in 7.8 seconds is trying to get you to conclude on like or dislike, friend or foe, you know, in or out, whatever it might be. And if you can bring this into your conscious, I promise you this, you will go, by the time you get home today, your chimp will be out. Something will trigger you. Maybe a driver on the road or something or whatever it might be. And I want you to smile and go, it's happening. You know, you can turn around to someone and say, you've just pissed me off, but it's okay. I'm in control. I know what's happening, right? It will happen all the time. And I want you to consciously, you can't ever stop it, but you can intervene and just say, do you know what? It doesn't have to be fight or flight. It can be freeze. And the reason why freeze is important, because in a whole minute and a half to 2 minutes, your logical brain is going to start to kick in and you will feel completely different, or you'll start to take a completely different path. Parents in the room, husbands, wives, friends. I had an experience a few weeks back. I came in, that email came into my inbox on the way out of the office. So it's stewing in my head all the way home. I parked the car, I gets out the car, I replied all, I CC'd everybody in on it, and I'm typing an emotionally fueled email response at 6 p.m. as I walk through the door. I ignore my wife, I ignore my other two children, and I goes into the living room, and I'm typing this email out in a chimp-led manner. And my 10-year-old daughter comes up to me, and she's going, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. She's tugging on my arm, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. And the thing about me is, when I'm busy and someone interrupts me, my chimp comes out. So she's going, Daddy, Daddy, Daddy. So I said, darling, will you just stop? Daddy's working. I'll be 2 minutes. It's important. Just stop. And I finished my email and I sent the email. And then I looked up and this overwhelming guilt came over me. You know, I just snapped at my daughter. I shouldn't really be emailing at six. My logical brain's now kicking in going, you're out of line. What's this? So I goes to find my daughter. She's in the playroom. And I said, sorry, Isabel, darling. Daddy was busy then. What did you want? And you know what kids are like? She said, do you know what, Dad? I can't remember now. And do you know what's sad about that? She might have met a new friend at school that day or delivered a project or done something she was really excited about. And I'll never know what she wanted to share with me. And not only that, but I snapped at her with my chimp. Does this make sense? And we can all think of instances in our personal and professional life, wet towels on the bed, squeezing the toothpaste in the middle, leaving your shoes at the front door, all the things that drive you crazy, which makes you chimp off, when actually if you applied a little bit of logic, it would be completely different. My main point this morning, as we move on to what I'm going to share with you now, is we all have a chimp. It's human nature. It's there to protect us at all costs. But very few things in life are life or death. And therefore, very few things in life need to be acted on right in the present before you've had time to stop and apply and engage your logical brain. Does this make sense? Some of you will do it more naturally than others. Some of you will be like me, where you're just chimp-led all the time. In fact, it's like chimp warfare in the house on a daily basis, right? Well, whoever you are, think about this. In the book that's in your bag, in my book, I write a whole chapter on this. And I would also, again, order Steve Peters' book, The Chimp Paradox, if you want to find out more, because it's a fascinating book and it really does bring your behavior into your conscious. So let's move it on. How do you do this then? How does the brain, how does this clever emotional brain do this? Well, we have brain chemicals. They're actually neurotransmitters, but let's call them chemicals. Your brain's very clever. It can release chemicals into your brain that make you feel in a certain way. The first three are what I call feel-good chemicals. Now, if you can't see the screen, don't worry, but these are serotonin, dopamine, and oxytocin. They release that make you have confidence, drive, ambition. They feel trust and rapport with other people. They're our feel-good reward-based chemicals. And they're usually as a result of our actions. However, the red chemical is the chimp's weapon of choice. It is called cortisol. And cortisol floods our brain to give us that fight or flight response. Cortisol floods your brain to say, switch on, this is important to you, or you are at risk. Does this make sense? Think of your biggest fear. Mine's wasps. I know. Bad fear, that, isn't it? I've got to get a more masculine fear. But mine's wasps, right? The top five fears globally surveyed in 85 countries was this. In fifth place was death, dying. Fourth was heights. Third was open water or closed spaces. Two was an array of insects like spiders and snakes and wasps and bugs. What do you think the number one global fear was? Public speaking. Nailed it. More people would rather die than speak in public. You're all nodding. Public speaking. Do you know why? Because the chimp, when people speak in public, the chimp comes out, and if you had to get up on this stage now and address everybody for at least 10 minutes, right, even for a couple of minutes, your chimp would be saying to you, what the hell are we doing? Sit down. What if people think you're stupid? What, you don't know what you're talking about? What if you start sweating, right? And this is not for us. And then all of a sudden, you remove yourself out of the fear, and your chimp goes, got away with that one. Remember, we don't speak in public. So the next time it comes again, the chimp pops out, searches the computer. Oh yeah, do you remember last time when you nearly had a panic attack? We don't speak in public. And the more you avoid your fears, the greater they grow. Does this make sense? I work with young children and I work with schools and education, because you've got to place yourself in the fear. You know, you've got to place yourself in, and then sooner or later, the gremlin becomes smaller and you create what we call an autopilot in the brain for it. Think of the first time you took your driving test. My leg was shaking on the clutch. I was terrified. Absolutely. I drove here this morning without, I don't even know I got here. Because after 15, 20 years, you just do it on autopilot. And this is the brain. This is what we're going to do. We're going to put ourselves into the fear. But cortisol is what makes you say you are at risk here, or switch on, this is important. So in order to become productive and collaborative with others, we must understand the difference between a challenge and a threat state. If there is anything you take from my talk today, just let it be this. It's my piece of work that I have taken from multiple different sources and my experiences with our customers over the years. And I think you can simplify mindset at any one time as you being in a challenge or a threat state. You will be either in a challenge state mindset or a threat state mindset driven from what I've just said to you about the brain. What are they? The challenge state is when you, as an individual in whatever you are doing, are 100% focused on the positive achievement of a task at hand. You are aware of consequence or repercussions. You are aware of what might go wrong, right? Of failure, of exposure, judgment. You're aware of all these things, but you are 100% focused on what you want to achieve. Does that make sense? Human beings who are in a challenge state are incredibly productive. What's a threat state? A threat state is something slightly different. It's when your brain shifts. You release too much cortisol from the chimp, and now you are almost entirely focused on the consequence of what might happen, eradicating any focus on achieving it. Does this make sense? And the line is so fine. Do you know what? The best sportsmen and women I work with are challenge state sportsmen and women. The ones who buckle under pressure, it's nothing to do with talent. It's the ones who cannot maintain a challenge state. They shift to the consequence of what might happen. Let me give you an example in sport. The penalty shootout in the World Cup final. It's 4-3. You're the penalty taker coming up for the team with four. If you score, you win the World Cup. If you miss, you're still in it. What state are they going to be in? Challenge state. Because they're focused on scoring the penalty, on what they want to achieve. Up steps the penalty taker who's got three. If he scores, they're still in it. If he misses, the team's out the World Cup. What state of mind is he going to be in? A threat state. Because your brain switches to the consequence of what might happen, which in this case is catastrophic. And that's why in major tournaments, someone skies a penalty in row Z and you scream at the telly going, you're on 5 million quid a second. How can you not score it? Well, they can't score it because they're in a threat state. And when we go into a threat state, cortisol floods our brain. We have sensory shutdown. We cannot perform at our peak. Does this make sense so far? I'm doing a lot of work on challenge and threat state because it's an easy concept to understand. It looks something like this, and I'm going to give you a couple of examples of it. It's all when I talk to my kids and I work with schools, I'm trying to get to teenagers and talk about this because I believe young people today are catastrophizing basic human stress. They're catastrophizing it because of a number of things, and we've got to redress the balance. We've got to say stress is not the issue, how you interpret it is. Because stress, if you look at this grid, is a normal thing. And in fact, we need stress to perform at our peak and to be motivated and have adrenaline, right, and reach that peak performance zone. And what it says is if we release a healthy amount of stress, a healthy amount of cortisol to say, switch on, this is important to me, and we have a degree of control over what we do, we can perform in that performance zone, that peak box. I'm in that box right now. I'm sat there as I'm getting introduced. There's 400-500 people in this audience. You've all given up your Sunday morning, right? And I'm getting my chimp coming out going, you better be good. This is an audience because you're all larger than life, and that's what I'll say. You're wonderful both yesterday and today, and you're not shut backwards in coming forwards with your opinions, right? So I'm thinking, you better be good and on your toes today. You've got to prove yourself. But I don't allow it to consume me. I go, okay, I control what goes on up here. I embrace the stress, game on, challenge state. And that allows me to try and focus on giving you the best 50 minutes that I could possibly give. Does this make sense? So we've got to interpret the stress response. We've got to interpret it in the right way. And here's the tip I'm going to give you on this when you're speaking to your children, when you're speaking to your friends, or when you're trying to collaborate in a group or motivate or mobilize another group of human beings. Here's the golden rule of thumb. And I'm going to set it up with a story. Butch Harmon is a famous golf coach. He's Tiger Woods' golf coach. He stood behind another golf coach who's watching a golfer, and the golfer's hitting the ball into the water on the right. Three times in a row, the golfer hits the ball on the right, and this golf coach is stood behind him going, you're going right. Stop going right. You're in the watch that water on the right. Go left. Stop going right. So the golfer keeps doing it. So Butch Harmon says, he's observing this, and he says, do you mind if I ever go? So the golf coach says, yeah, sure, be my guest. So Butch Harmon goes really closely behind the golfer, and I want you to remember this, what I'm about to say. He goes really closely behind the golfer, and he says, listen, here's what I want you to do. Really important that. Here's what I want you to do. Pull your heel back 2 inches, stick your bum out, straighten your back, and I want you to hit that ball right down the middle. What has he instantly done to the golfer? The golfer forgets about the consequence of the water. He comes back to the present. He makes the adjustment. He focuses on what he can control. He makes the adjustment, and he hits the ball clean down the middle. Because Butch Harmon put the golfer in a challenge state, and here's the golden rule of thumb. When you communicate with your children, with each other, with groups of people in the workplace, whatever it might be, always focus on what you want them to achieve and make it instructional or offer advice, and stop bloody focusing on what we want people to avoid. Does this make sense? Too often, and we're all guilty, too often when we're under pressure and our chimp is out and we're in a threat state, we regurgitate that to the people around us. Have you ever found yourself doing this? We must not do X. We can't afford for this to go wrong. You do it to your kids all the time. You can't do this. This is bad. That's threatening. This is, and we wonder why sometimes we're raising the most anxious generation the world has ever seen, right? There's other reasons for it, but we've got to take a bit of ownership, right? We've got to take some ownership to understand that how the stress response is a normal thing. It's a human thing. It cannot be catastrophized. And if we interpret it as a challenge and not a threat, right, we are capable of amazing things. When we become consumed by the consequence of what may happen in the future that we can't control, it's a self-perpetuating cycle. We call it hypothetical worries. Worrying on things you can't control that may happen in the future. Have you ever found yourself laid awake at night thinking about something trivial that you've got to do on Friday and you're thinking, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, get to bloody sleep. So you think, right, that's enough now, forget about it. And then what happens in 10 seconds? You think, I'm thinking about it again. And then you're looking at the clock and you're clock watching and it's 10 to 2 in the morning, right? Have you ever found yourself doing this? It's because you're trying to push worries away. You're in threat state, worried about the consequence, and you're trying to push it away. I taught my wife a technique. If you've got a worry that's coming in about something, acknowledge it. Acknowledge it and go, this is okay. It's basic, it's important to me. Switch the light on, pad and pen next to the bed, and write 2 or 3 actions that you're going to do the very next day to alleviate that worry. She turns the light off, she's asleep in 5 minutes. Because part of it is getting it out of there and down somewhere else and making some bloody decisions and taking action. Because let me tell you, there is nothing more powerful than a decided mind.
The next T2 Leadership Retreat will take place on the 7th to the 9th of May, 2024. To book your place on the Ultimate Leadership Development Experience from the People Performance People, or for more information, please visit www.trans2performance.com.
So challenge threat state is really, really important. Let me just add a bit of context and moving this along nicely, but let me add a bit of context. I mentioned something there that said we're potentially raising the most anxious generation the world has ever seen. That might be a sweeping statement, but let me tell you what I'm talking about. Pre-1918, if you think about 100 years ago, I'm sure nobody was alive 100 years ago in this room, but close, right? If did I get away with that? I was doing so well. 100 years ago, we used to have breakfast with our families. We'd exchange in conversations. We'd walk to work, right, or commute to work. We'd engage with 2 dozen people in the workplace. We'd come home, we'd have tea with our family, and we'd go to bed. It would probably account for about 100 inputs in the brain per day. 100 inputs socially in the brain a day. Now, if you understand that, our chimp is interpreting every input. 100 inputs is manageable. We wouldn't have been, you know, triggered into a threat state a lot back in those days. Does this make sense? Then you fast forward to 1975, the emergence, or between 1918 and 1975, the emergence of TV and radio. We now started to not only have first-hand information in the brain, right? But we could consume information from TV and radio on world events, which meant that our inputs into the brain jumped to about 1,000 inputs a day. So that's tenfold. All of a sudden now we've got all these other stuff that could trigger a threat state in us coming into the brain. It's 1975 to 2000, personal computers and the internet. Our brain started to become infiltrated by an unprecedented amount of information, up to 30,000 inputs a day, because we could consume it firsthand, TV, radio, but now we could at the click of a button access any information, any global event, anywhere. Does this make sense? So all of a sudden, the human brain over 100 years has started to become infiltrated by an unprecedented amount of information, right? Now you fast forward to today. We have smartphones and devices. So all of that information can be accessed or even pushed and bleeped and, you know, alerted to you every 12 seconds. every 12 seconds. It is thought that modern day societies are growing up with 100,000 inputs into the brain a day. 100,000. From email to phone to colleagues to first hand to TV to radio to social media to Netflix to on-demand digital platform, on demand anywhere we go, right? 100,000 inputs a day. It's enough to fill a modern day computer in a week, and we process that a day in our brain, right? Now, technology gives us an enormous opportunity in the future, and we should embrace it. But what we've got to educate our kids and our colleagues and ourselves on is how we interpret things as a challenge or a threat is an incredibly important crossroads, right? We've all done it. You scroll through social media and you're seeing posts you don't want to see. You're seeing videos you don't want to see. It's on the 6 o'clock news. It's everywhere, right? But just we've got to understand and educate people how we interpret events and the stress response is absolutely critical. And I choose challenge, not threat, every single time. So coming back to Sjogren syndrome, how do I keep myself in a challenge state? Not only is it very rare in me because I am a male and 9 out of 10 who get Sjogren syndrome are female, but very rarely is it diagnosed under the age of 50. So I'm a young male, and I'm a bit baffling to the consultants, right? But I sat down in front of the consultant. My wife is sat next to me, and she's a real worrier, is my wife. She's a threat state person. He said two things to me. He said, firstly, Martin, I've got to tell you this. You will suffer these symptoms for the rest of your life. It is an incurable autoimmune disease. And me being nonchalant and challenged state, I thought to myself, listen, I may have them for the rest of my life, but I'll decide if I bloody suffer them. Thank you very much, right? That's how I thought. Second thing he said caught me off guard. He said, Martin, you now stand a 40% increased chance of developing non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer, at which point my wife starts to have a meltdown because she's the ultimate threat state person, right? And I get it and I understand it. Meanwhile, in my seat, I'm Googling the survival rates of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma under the table, 92%. So my brain's going, so I'm 92% likely to survive something I'm only 40% chance of getting in the first place. I'll take those bloody odds, challenge state. And that's how I live my life, and that's how I progress through Sjogren syndrome. It's why I do what I do, right? It's why I focus on what I can control in the moment to manage this condition and still live a really normal and healthy life. And it can be done. You know what? I went on the forums, the multiple sclerosis and Sjogren's forums, to try and find out a bit of an idea. And I had to come off after two pages. They've all given up work, right? They're all sat at home. It's the end of the world. They're all on every immune suppressant and drug under the sun. And now I'm not judging anybody because each to their own, but I'm thinking, I'm not even in that camp, right? I'm in the camp of going, how do I steam through life and get through this and still achieve what I want to achieve? And that's what challenge state people do. It's how you interpret the stress response and not being consumed into that threat state naturally. And this is what I do. I go across on my merry way. I hit a red dot because I'm human and something challenges me and I want to go challenge and not threat. So we'll all reach the threat state crossroads in our life when something triggers us. We're humans, right? Your chimp is naturally going to send you towards a threat state. But here's what I want you to do. Master the ABC technique. I teach this to people who are suffering from stress, anxiety, or depression. I work with charities. I work with kids. You know, I volunteer down at the Andy's Man Club in Hull, and I've talked to them about this. Here's what you need to do, or here's the thing that we can control that we can do. When we get a stress or a worry, or we're anxious, we need to acknowledge it and not push it away. You're getting the theme here. We need to understand that we have a limbic system, a chimp, that is there to protect us. It's a survival thing, and the cortisol stress response is normal. Right? It's not us being weak or inferior. It's not a disease. It's not an illness. The stress response is normal. It's programmed in us for survival, right? So the minute we acknowledge what's happening, magical things happen. When we push it away, or when we wish it unwell, or when we don't want it, that's when it starts to come back tenfold. So you've got to pause in the moment and acknowledge it. Number two, and you know what? When I'm having a bit of a flare-up with Sjogren's and I'm getting myself worked up a little bit, it's the first thing I do. I sit down with a cup of tea and I acknowledge I've got an autoimmune disease. This is normal, right? But it's normal for me now. B, breathing. Now, some people believe in mindfulness. It's a wonderful thing. It's not just some fluffy Buddha stuff, right? It does work. Your physiology affects your psychology. When you slow and moderate your breathing, you delay any form of threat state coming into your mind. You delay that that cortisol response, that sensory shutdown, and you give yourself time to engage your logical brain. I'm not saying you've got to sit there and go in the middle of Greg's, right? What I'm saying is just become conscious of your breathing, give yourself a minute to engage your logical brain. And the third and final one is C, control. We have to bring it back to the present and focus on what I control in the here and now to alleviate this concern anyway, right? It's the number one thing we can do as human beings. What do I control? Well, I control my diet. I control exercise. I control my workload, right? I control everything that can help me live a health life with autoimmunity. And that's what I'm doing, right? I can't control what the outcome of that might be in 30 years or what might be a complication of it. You know, I've just got to control what I focus on what I control in the present. And that's what I'm doing, A, B, C. And when you teach this to people, they can, in the moment, when they're becoming overwhelmed and being triggered into a threat state, they can wrestle back some control. Does this make sense? So, reframing a threat into a challenge. Stress is not the issue, and our interpretation of it can be. We have to educate people that what I dislike, and I think we've got a bit of an epidemic where somebody becomes anxious or not performing or struggling, and they go, there's some tablets. You know, it's an illness. And we completely take the accountability and ownership away from the individual. My belief is saying, if that's the way we go, fine, but let's not remove the accountability that we have, how we recognize it and interpret it and move forward. And that's what we're trying to do, and we're making huge strides and success with that. So my challenge to you is this. You've all got a chimp, right? It's not going to go away. It's there to protect you one day and save your life, but in every other occasion, it'll play havoc with you over trivial things. Be conscious of the chimp. Don't have to be fight or flight like dislike. Just freeze. Engage your logical brain and start interpreting the response as I'm going to take this on as a challenge and not become consumed by the consequence and threat. So I'm going to finish off this, and then you can ask me any questions you want. Seven qualities of productive people. What I find universally, and I thought this was a good place to finish building on everything we've said, many people in different environments thrive, and it's for different reasons. But what we found through our research at Trans2 and in all the organizations we work with is productive people share the same seven qualities, right? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to share with you them very quickly and either write it down or think in your head, opportunity or continue, i.e., is this something you already do well and you will continue doing it? Or by your own admission, is this an opportunity for you to bring in throughout the rest of the day and the rest of your life? Number one, the first quality of productive people is that they are open loop thinkers. They're not closed loop thinkers. What is closed loop thinking? Closed loop thinking is when you start to predetermine the outcome to a situation, scenario, or event before the situation, scenario, or event even takes place. It's when you go, oh, I know what's going to happen here. I know how this is going to end up. It'll never work. Have you ever said that? That'll never work. I do it in my personal life. A few weeks back, my wife said to me, we're going to my mother's and father's for dinner on Sunday. And I went, oh, do we have to? Now, I love my mother and father-in-law dearly, right? But I'd been busy at work. I was thinking the kids will run riot. You know, the house is small and they'll probably trash it. My father-in-law will put air crash investigation programs on, and I don't like it, and he still doesn't get it, right? So I'm going like this, and my wife said to me, look at you, you're closed-loop thinking. Because she knows all this content now, so I can't get away with anything, right? She said, you're closed-loop thinking, and then she said something that'll stay with me. She went, do you know what? My dad's in his 70s. He won't be around forever, and one day you will give your right arm to watch air crash investigation with him one last time. And I felt about that big. So I thought, do you know what? You're right. I got showered. I got ready. We went. We had a fabulous day. The kids trashed the place. Right? Yes, it's small. Yes, he put air crash investigation on. And I smiled. And I entertained it. And we watched it. And do you know what? I had a fabulous day because it will be what we want it to be. You can get caught up in closed loop thinking through all of those memories in your computer. You know, we're going to Alton Towers with the kids. Do we have to? It's going to be 3-hour queues. The traffic will be horrendous. It's going to be £8 a Coke. And you're making it miserable already, right? These are all my stories, by the way, right? And then you go, and yes, it is 3 hours a queue, an £8 a cup. But you know what? I've taken my kids all over the world, Australia, Mexico, Cyprus, everywhere. And the only holiday they ever talk about is bloody Alton Towers. Right? Because it will be what we want it to be. In the workplace, somebody comes up with an innovative new idea and you will go, that'll never work. We tried that 10 years ago. And you write it off instantly. Closed loop thinking is where you start to predetermine the outcome to a situation before you've even give it a shot. Does this make sense? And let me remember what I said about the chimp. You will always try to justify why you are right and very rarely challenge why you are wrong, which is why you'll go and find all the evidence as to why you're right so you can sit back in the car on the way home and say, I bloody told you so, right? I knew it. Challenge yourself. The most high-profile case ever of closed-loop thinking is Tony Blair, Weapons of Mass Destruction. I was still serving at the time. We go to war in Iraq in 2003, right, to find weapons of mass destruction. 3 months in, we don't find a thing. He comes out in the media and he says, we haven't found weapons of mass destruction yet. It's only a matter of time. Right? So another 3 months goes by, we put more scientists, more resources, more military in. We don't find a shred of evidence. He comes out in the media again. He says, we haven't found weapons of mass destruction. Bear with us. It's only a matter of time. Another 9 months goes by. The war has raged. It's one of the worst conflicts we've seen in recent years. We do not find a shred of evidence. He finally concedes. And he comes out in the media and he says, I have to concede. We have not found weapons of mass destruction. They must have been moved or destroyed. To the bitter end, when human beings want to close loop think, this is how it works on the screen. You define the outcome, you start on your green dot, you go through the process, reframing any evidence that says you're wrong, right? Reframing it in your own brain so you can arrive at the red dot and say, I told you so. And in my experience, the biggest inhibitor to productivity and collaboration and teams in organizations is closed loop thinking. When people are writing off situations and ideas before they've even given them a fair crack. And we do it in our personal and professional lives. Just challenge yourself if you're getting dragged into that. What you want to be is an open loop thinker. Open loop thinkers go on a few, they have a few open loops and they go in mission of discovery. I have this chimp response. I think Alton Towers is a waste of time. I think the kids are going to be a nightmare, and I think I'm not going to enjoy it. But am I wrong? Right? Am I wrong? And you go on the mission of discovery. And what happens is we engage our logical brain. We find one or two opportunities that actually might make it a different experiences. That will lead to completely different set of actions, and we'll always arrive at a different outcome. Does this make sense? Not many people know this, but I had a failed business before I had a successful one. I had a failed business because I made 2 grave errors. I surrounded myself with people like myself. Can you imagine that? So we were all like boisterous and expressive and visionary and taking on the world, but nobody was managing the accounts or doing any detail or watching what we were spending. And we used to sell flood protection systems to homes and commercial properties, you know, flood protection barriers. So when the floods happened, you remember, I thought we're going to clean up, literally. And anyway, right, the British Standards Institute kitemark came out and said, you can't sell flood protection unless it's got a standard British standard kitemark. So the product fell off the market overnight. So I thought, you know what, it's all right. I'll take the bit of profit in the bank. We'll split it between who set the company up and we'll learn the lesson. But nobody had been monitoring the cost. We owed more money out than we had in. Yeah, right. So we learned a lesson. We tidied that up. But if I was a closed-loop thinker, when I came to set up Trans2, I'd have gone, Martin, remember your crap at business. Don't set a business up. I didn't. I looked at the mistakes we made last time, and the first thing I did when I started Trans2 is I hired people who were nothing like me. And they've been my savior, because I run through life like I do, trying to take the world on, and they mop up behind me, and it bloody works, right? That's what open-loop thinkers do, and I want you to challenge yourself. Quality 2. Last 10 minutes, stay with me. Simplicity beats complexity every time. You in the room, there'll be some people who'll resonate with this. You have an uncanny knack of over-engineering a lot of things and overthinking a lot of things. The most productive people I meet simplify everything they do. They focus on the power of 3, only 3 things at any one time. 1, 2, 3, and then I'll bring more in. They simplify their language. I've talked about neuroscience to you today, but I've told you probably 10 stories that the minute I tell the story, you get what I'm talking about. So the minute you got the chimp analogies when I said you all made a decision on me in the first 5 minutes of today, I don't need to talk about the brain. I just tell you a story. Simplification beats complexity every day of the week. My favorite story on this is NASA. In the 1940s, the American astronauts were struggling writing their journals in the space station because the ink was being drawn to the back of the pen with gravity. So they were having interruptions in recording their journals. So NASA spent millions of dollars and 2 years developing a pen where the ink would not be drawn to the back of the pen. Millions of dollars and 2 years. And meanwhile, the Russians, well, they took a pencil up. The Russians took a pencil up, right? That is a classic example of simplicity beats complexity every single time. Focus on three things at any one time. Tell stories, you know, simplify your communication and bring what you do alive in the mind of the others. And that's what productive people do. Number three, they fail fast and move on. I am on a mission. If my life work achieves anything, challenge and threat state message is going to be one of them. But if the other one is going to be to our young children and our generations to say, we've got to reframe failure. Failure is not bad. I believe the education system is flawed. With this pass or fail aggressive mentality, the gold group, the silver group, the bronze group, the grading systems. I'm not saying they don't serve a purpose because they do. But what we are saying is pass or fail is good or bad. And when we get in the real world, as you know, we have to fail at a lot of things to learn. We have to be willing to have a go, fail and fail fast and move on, right? And this is what I'm saying in organizations. The most productive teams and people foster an environment where it's okay to mess up, right? It's okay to mess up in safe areas and fail and learn from it and move on. And that's what productive people do. They're not held back by the fear of failure. What does the fear of failure do? It triggers a threat state in you. More people suffer anxiety in a threat state because they're worried about what might go wrong, because their whole concept of failure from an early age is to say it is bad. And it's bloody not, right? It's not. So fail fast and move on. If you're one of those who doesn't mind having a go at this, keep doing it. If not, it's an opportunity for you. Number four, fake it till you make it. Believe me. All right? Fake it. If I said to you, the first 3 years I used to speak for a living, I was terrified. On the inside, I was trembling. My chimp was going mad. I'd get in the car afterwards. I would collapse emotionally and think never again. Right? But you know what? I was like the swan. On the outside, you thought, oh, he's a confident guy. And on the inside, I was pedaling like crazy. And for 3 years, that happened to me. Only 3 years I started to manage it. After 14 years now, I genuinely get self-fulfillment from speaking with you this morning and doing it, and the fear is gone. But the power of repetition has made me do that. But guess what? I had to fake it. I had to fake it until I made it. And there's something to be said for that for all of us. Because we feel unsure at times with our children, with our friends, with our colleagues. But the person who can have that command in front and be like the swan, right, and be calm on the exterior and pedal like crazy on the inside, that's what productive people do. Because the minute you physically, you know, don't do that, that's when it all starts to go in. I said my biggest fear is wasps. In the summer, I sit in the garden with my kids around the table and a wasp lands on my drink. And on the inside, I'm going, oh, Jesus Christ. I'm sweating, thinking I need to get the hell out of here. That wasp's going to sting me. On the outside, I'm going, kids, nobody move. And they're all going, what you want about Dad? It's only you. It's only you scared of wasps. No, I'm not. Right? So I'm trying to be like the swan. You've got to fake it till you make it in business, in your volunteering programs, when you're influencing other people, if you're unsure, if you go into some of the workshops this afternoon, you think, oh, I'm a bit nervous about this. Fake it till you bloody make it, because that's what productive people do. Quality five, resources versus resourcefulness, almost there, 5 minutes. There are two types of people in this world. There are people who will blame a lack of resources for a lack of their success, and we all know them, right? My company's rubbish, my boss is rubbish, I don't have enough staff, I don't have enough equipment, I haven't got enough money, I don't come from the right background. And we blame everything in it, the economy's rubbish, Brexit, let's not even go there, right? Brexit. Everyone asks me my opinion on Brexit. I say, I don't really give a shit. I don't really care, because whatever environment that happens afterwards, right, I will thrive in, because I will adapt. There's something to be said for that. I don't really care. If we stay in, I will succeed. If it's a no-deal Brexit, I will bloody succeed. Right? If it's a deal, I'll succeed. And that's what we've got to what productive people do. So there's the people who blame the lack of resources and the events around them for the lack of the success. But then there's those people who get incredibly resourceful. When I started my business 4 years ago and I sat on my own, I had this dawning realization, what the hell have you done? I've got 3 children and a wife. The bills need to be paid in a month and I don't have any customers. So I thought, you know what? I'll ring up all the conferences in the UK and I'll get a speaking gig. Because if people can hear me and feel my passion, then I'll get some customers. So I rang the first one and I said, my name's Martin Johnson. I'm a motivational speaker. I wasn't. Right? She said, yes, Martin, if you can send us a video of you speaking in front of 200 people or more, right? I will put you on. And I went, well, I haven't got the video. If you put me on, I'll have the video. Sorry, Martin. So I rang every conference in the UK. Nobody would have me on unless I could prove with a video that I was competent enough to put on the stage and speak in front of people. And I just couldn't get a gig. And time was running out. So here's what I did. I took £10,000 of my own money, right? I hired the deep out for the evening. I created an event called T2 Talks. I convinced 4 other speakers to speak on the stage with me. We got 200 people from business in the audience. I hired a film crew to capture it, all in the bid that I would finally have my video that would get me on the stage. Since then, we've sold out 5 T2 Talks to over 5,000 people. We have 100,000 hits on YouTube. And guess who comes ringing for the speaking gigs now? Too late, I'm busy. I'm not. I accept it every time. But the point is I had to get resourceful. Does that make sense? I could have sat back and blamed the world why I couldn't get any customers or speaking gigs. You have to get resourceful. You know, all the things that you don't have, get resourceful. That's what I've done all my career. Nothing has ever been impossible for me, even coming from Sutton Park and Bransome and having no education and going to the military. And I always told people I would have my own business and I would speak in front of people and everybody laughed. I always told people I would become an author and write a book and everybody laughed. Right? Because the people who don't have the resources get incredibly resourceful, and that's what I'd implore you to do. That's being resourceful, right? Go and get me a few bricks. Ends up being about 100. Number 6, reciprocation. There are 2 types of reciprocation in this world, i.e. you do something for me and I do something for you. 2 types of reciprocation, unconditional and conditional. Now, having served in the military, it is the only environment that I've experienced unconditional reciprocation. Because if you ask any person who served in the military why somebody went down into that compartment, why somebody ran across a field of bullets, why somebody put themselves in the firing line for somebody else, they will always say along the same lines, because they would have done the same for me. And whether I've served with you for 1 day or 1 year, I will risk my life for you. It's an unwritten rule, right? Very few environments like it in the world. It's unconditional reciprocation. Businesses and other environments and personal life, it's entirely conditional, i.e. you do something for me and I'll do something for you. You scratch my back and I'll scratch your back. Even business, you give me money and I'll give you a product or service, right? And it's okay, but here's my tip for productive people. You've got to go first. Too often do we get caught up in our life saying, well, what have they ever done for me? You've got to go first. When you reach out and start doing things for other people first, it always comes back in kind, tenfold. And here's what I want you to stop doing. When you, and I'm speaking to the wrong audience here, you probably all do this, you're volunteers, right? When you do something for somebody else first and they say, you're welcome, stop saying, they say, thank you, stop saying you're welcome. And when you do something for someone, they go, oh, thanks. And you go, you're welcome. Stop saying that. What I want you to say from this day forward is this: it's okay, I know you'll do the same for me. It's okay, I know you will do the same for me. What you're saying is, you bloody owe me now. And I'm going to cash that in when I need it. But it plants an unconditional seed of reciprocation. It's all right, I know you'd do the same for me. And they think, yeah, I bloody would, right? That's what productive people do. They go first with reciprocation, and it's a wonderful thing. It comes back tenfold. Last one, before I take any questions. Resilience. You've got to keep knocking. I'm teaching it, I'm trying to work with the kids, I'm trying to work with the generations, but it applies to all of us. With that chimp, with everything I've said, with threat state mindsets, you can give up on your dreams and ambitions and stuff that you want to do too quickly. I always tell the story of the Chinese bamboo tree. I'm not lying, you can Google this, it's a true story. The Chinese bamboo tree, when you plant the seed of a Chinese bamboo tree in the ground, it takes 5 years of watering and feeding before the first green shoot pokes its head through the soil. 5 years. Can you imagine being the person responsible for watering the Chinese bamboo tree? Month one, month six, year two. People are going, you're crazy, give up, what you're doing, it's dead, right? 5 years before the green shoot becomes through the water. But here's the amazing thing about Chinese bamboo tree forests. Within 5 weeks of poking its nose through the soil, Chinese bamboo trees go to 90 feet tall, 90 feet high in 5 weeks. And I believe with resilience and everything I've talked about with challenge and threat state and the brain and acknowledging and embracing who we are and what we are and interpreting it into something positive, Chinese bamboo tree is like our life. Too often do we give up because something is hard or it's not working, right? But if you keep watering and you keep knocking and you keep feeding, when your Chinese bamboo tree breaks through the soil, you watch it grow, right? You watch it grow. And I think we've got a duty to pass that message on to everybody. And I know I'm speaking to the right audience. So before I take any questions, I know what you do is wonderful. It's a pleasure for me to be here with you on a Saturday and a Sunday morning. I've thoroughly enjoyed every second of it. And because what I believe you do is serve. You serve as volunteers. And in my military career, I never felt thanked. Even though it was a 5-year period and it wasn't the most longest amount of time. I came out because I never felt like I served a purpose in the military. And right at the end of the resettlement course, I was 2 weeks from exiting the military, and I spent 4 days on a course with a guy from America. And he came over and we built a friendship over the course. And he asked me what I was going to do after I left the military, and he was talking about my family and his family, and we created quite a bond. And at the end of the course, when he was going to go back to the airport, he put his hand out and he shook my hand. He said, Martin, it's a pleasure to meet you. Let's stay in touch. He said, but I just want to say one final thing. Thank you for your service. And you know what? 2 weeks from leaving the military was the only time that I ever felt that I was serving a purpose in the military, when one person said to me, thank you for your service. So I'd like to finish my talk today by thanking you for yours. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much.
Hi.
Oh, I nearly made myself cry all the time, you know.
I'm one of these people. I'm either on it like a cow bonnet. I'm like a real, I'm doing this. It's a challenge. And then I've got another side of me that's like, goes completely to the threat side. Mm. And it's, do you ever sort of like, how do you keep on the challenge side kind of thing? Because I am very, it's all or nothing.
Yeah,
with me, and it's a real tough one.
Yeah, I can imagine. And you know, if I did any personal development with you and we looked at your unconscious motivators and what drives that, there'd probably be a reason why you flip quite a lot. But what I was saying earlier about recognizing when you're at the threat state crossroads, because what's happening, I guess, with you is you recognize when you're already in it. You've already gone full throttle into threat state and you're in that spiral, and then you're recognizing the feelings and emotions. The key thing is to try and recognize the origins of that. So when you're arriving at the threat state or the trigger that is about to happen that sends you into a threat state, and just try and focus on that ABC. Acknowledge it and embrace it. Give yourself a moment with your breathing and to just engage your logical brain, and just try and get a pen and a paper. What do I control in the here and now that I can focus my mind on? You know, like the golfer. If the golfer's going, I'm going in the water, I keep going in the water, what's wrong with me? But when his brain switched to going foot back 2 inches, bum out, straight back, he's not thinking about the water. So mastering the art of redirection with your brain is incredibly important, but you've got to start forming a knack of recognizing the triggers that send you into a threat state and then intervene at the crossroads. It'll take time. It'll take repetition. But if I sat with you for an hour and I asked you 20 questions, I bet me and you could get 10 triggers in your life that send you into it. So once you've got the triggers down, then it's about recognizing when they happen and ABC in every single one of them. And sooner or later, you will form habitual patterns of behavior around deploying it. Does that make sense? I hope that helps, but maybe start by compiling a list of the 10 things that trigger you into a spiral and then getting really actionable on them, because there's nothing more powerful than a decided mind.
Thank you so much. It's a hell of a way to spend a Sunday morning. You've talked a lot about people controlling their own behaviour. Have you got any tips on when you think somebody might just need a little bit of a hint on controlling theirs?
Yeah, God, yeah. Have you met my middle child?
I have two of them.
My middle one's feral. Ooh. Feral. You know what? It's a great point. And if you think about the chimp analogy from Steve Peters' work, and you think about 10 seconds and our instant emotion is always going to be survival, first time, every time. Sometimes we think if we observe a behavior in others and we think we need to just be honest with them and put them straight, the way we communicate is important. I'm not saying we don't address the issue and raise it with other people, but you don't want to stoke their chimp. Does this make sense? Yeah. So too many people make the mistake and say, listen, I'm just going to be honest with you. You're too, whatever it is. Their chimp comes out and goes, oh, really? Shield comes up and we have a counterproductive. It's why when you try and tell your kids to stop doing something, what do they bloody do? They keep doing it, right? So we've got to go friend, not foe. I'm going to try and avoid the chimp response. I see it in the workplace all the time. Some managers go to people, this is not good enough. I need you to improve. And straight away, they wonder why they get a counteractive response. Here's what I would have said. Listen, you're doing some great things, X, Y, and Z. Keep doing them. Now let's focus on this. What have I just done? I've gone, calm the chimp. I've engaged you about all the great things you're doing, and I've earned the right to now say, I'm still delivering my improvement area, but I've earned the right to say it. And when you say that to somebody, here's what I do with my middle child. I no longer put her on the stop bottom step and say, I am not speaking to you until you stop crying. This is ridiculous, right? Because what do they do? Just melt down, right? I try and completely focus on what I want them to do instead, or, you know, tell them all the great things. If I say to my daughter, listen, you're a wonderful gymnast. You know, you've made a real effort with your bedroom this week, this, that, and the other. She's going, and her eyes are lighting up. And I say, now stop smashing the TV in with a golf club. Okay, daddy. Because I've raised her up and released those other chemicals before I've hit her with the improvement area. So I would always ask you to consider your first port of call is to avoid a chimp response. Yeah. To do that, you've got to engage a person. It's like, as well, if you're going to sow the seed on somebody else's improvement, but have a bit of humility and go first. Do you know what? I've recognized this about myself. I said, my wife was on the phone a lot. So I went in, and if I said to my wife, you're on your phone too much when after the thingy, she'd just fight me. So what I said to her is, I said, you know what? And it was true. I said, you know what? I've recognized over the last few weeks, I've been on my phone a bit too much on a night when the kids are still up. Should we make a conscious effort to do it? And my wife went, do you know what? Yeah, we should. Put a phone on the side. Social sciences. That makes sense.
Are you self-taught, or have you been on courses to sort of learn and find out all about this information?
Yeah, I was really fortunate. Both is the answer. So I was really fortunate originally that when I worked for Gartner, who was a global company, they put me through all my leadership courses, NLP, certain base level psychology, and I fell in love with it. So the qualifications and the courses that I went on, although there was a corporate in the corporate world and very focused on leadership in the corporate world, I just fell in love with the social element of that. I read Steve Peters' book. I then just become an avid reader, an avid self-learner. I set up my business 4 years ago, and we conduct research every year. So we're doing our own analysis. And then I wrote my book in December last year on the back of that. So I guess the answer is both. It was triggered by courses and learning and my experience in development, but I probably read and educate myself more than the average human being on a weekly basis.
My chimp state has made me put my hand up. My logical state has decided to put it down. What do you think has been the most challenging thing that you faced that in terms of you've been in a threat state and it's been really hard to move into the challenging state?
Great question. And without a shadow of a doubt, it's been my health. I've always been fit and healthy. As I said, ex-military, played rugby to a good standard all my life, trained hard. I'm not exactly, you know, overweight, or I've never had any challenges. I'm in my late 30s. So it was a huge shock to me when 2 years after starting my business, I started, I started experiencing symptoms that I'd never experienced before: dizziness, headaches, joint pain, really overwhelming fatigue, chronic dry eyes. And I just didn't, for a year and a half, I didn't know what was wrong with me. And I was going through all these tests and the GPs were getting nowhere. And in the end, through, to answer your question, through my own inquisitive brain, I researched everything I was experiencing. I narrowed it down to autoimmunity. And then I went back to the doctors and I said, nobody's tested me for autoimmunity. And I think that's what it is. They tested me the very next day I got the results. So I don't think I would be even diagnosed if I didn't take my own, you know, take it on myself. But that was hard for me to deal with because I was new in business. I had salaries to pay. I've got people dependent on me. I'd just taken the biggest risk of my life. And although I'm a very confident and driven person, I started to really wobble at the moment. I thought, well, if I'm not well enough to do what I do, what does that mean? So I'd say, when all said and done, what it's taught me is up until that point, I thought business and career and goals, and that was the most important thing. My wife lynches me when I say that. My kids and my wife, I love dearly, of course, but that for me secures their future. But what this has really taught me is your health is the most important thing. And actually now I take some time off. You know, I don't take everything at work so seriously because all I'm focused on is if I'm fit and healthy and well, the rest will come. So I'd say it was my health, if that makes sense.
Brilliant. Thank you.
Hi, listeners. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the T2 Hubcast. If you did, please consider leaving a 5-star review on your favourite podcasting platform. It only takes a minute and your feedback is greatly appreciated. Reviews help other people find the show and learn about the amazing topics we cover. Additionally, please turn on notifications so you never miss an episode. And finally, please subscribe or follow the T2 Hubcast if you haven't already. Doing this means that you'll automatically receive new episodes as soon as they're released. Thanks so much for your support.